And welcome to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. We have a great show for you today. We're just going to feature a long interview, which is really more of a stream of consciousness discussion, where Orin Lyons, who is the faith keeper of the Turtle Clan of the Onondaga Nation, the Onondaga Nation being one of the six nations of the Haudenosaunee, whose territory once encompassed most of New York State, Pennsylvania, and part of Ohio in the United States, and Ontario and Quebec in Canada. And it's also called the Iroquois Confederacy, and the six nations within it include the Mohawk, like here near Montreal, the Onondaga, the Seneca, the Cayuga, the Oneida, and the Tuscarora nations. So he spoke to people back in, I believe, 2006, who were working on the film The 11th Hour, which was an environmental documentary that was, I believe, co-produced by Leonardo DiCaprio. And eventually they put up on Tree TV on YouTube kind of the interview that they did with him in full. And it's about an hour-long interview. And I think it's very interesting, even though it's a bit dated now, because it's from back in 2006, but so many of these issues continue to be of concern. So we're going to feature this interview with Orin Lyons, which has been edited a little bit to make it make more sense for radio and to leave out some of the parts where he's discussing in more detail things that were going on back in 2006. And really just kind of preserve more of the indigenous philosophy in what he's saying here. So here is Orin Lyons speaking to Tree TV.
I'm Orin Lyons, that's my English name. Joat Gwisho is my clan name. The wolf is my clan. Onondaga is my nation. The Haudenosaunee is the Confederacy. And the Confederacy is better known as the Iroquois. We're old people. Been here a long time.
So the first question, from your vantage point and from your people's vantage point, what is creation?
Well, that's huge. It's huge like creation. Creation is the universe. Creation is everything that we can see and probably a whole lot that we can't, probably more that we can't see. But it's what's about us, and it's the relationship, this amazing web of life that we have here. And nature, which is part of creation, is more like the earth itself in its part, in its position in this whole web of life in the creation. We have relationships with all the elements and forces of life, including the sun, we call our elder brother, the moon, we call our grandmother, the winds, we call our grandfathers, the four directions, our grandfathers, and then all of the elements of life itself. So in this idea of creation, nature is the earth itself, and we call the earth mother, Itinoha, our mother, as we call all women Itinoha, mothers. And from mothers spring life, and we understand that. And we know that life springs from the earth, that generations that are looking up layer upon layer, waiting their time to come up and serve and be, is our responsibility. So the earth is female. If you have a mother, then you have children. So we're children. We're children of the earth. And we're tied to the earth. We come from the earth and we go back to the earth, and And the earth has great systems of regeneration, great cycles of regenerative life. And it's these cycles that we're all part of. Just as the earth has seasons of life, all animals and all things that grow and fly, and including humans, have seasons of life as well. And so we grow in the same style. What's different about all of that is the time that's allocated to the varieties of life that are on the earth. And we have a fairly long system of life, but not the longest. Turtles live beyond us. Parrots live beyond us. There are certain mammals that have an older life cycle than we do, but we have a long life cycle as it is on Earth. And then also, when you move down to the fine insects, then their life cycle is counted in days. So what you have is this variety and complexity of life and the times that are allocated and what happens during those times for each of these elements. That's what's important to understand.
In the understanding of the earth, what are your recommendations for how we should treat how humans treat the world and the planet and our resources? What is the disposition that we need to take, humans, toward the gifts that the planet provides us?
Well, what I've noticed and know about indigenous people around the earth is that many, many indigenous nations have been able to hang on to the knowledges that they have, the traditional knowledge, fortunately, I think, for everybody. And in this traditional knowledge is the directions, are the instructions for a good life. So we have instructions about how do we conduct ourselves on this earth. And probably the first one is respect. And I think if there was a law, a common law around the world, indigenous peoples, and I think everybody, respect is a law. And if people followed this law, simple law of respect, you'd have a lot more peace, and you'd have a lot more quiet and a better life. So I'd say respect, conduct yourself accordingly, and recognize what your obligations are and what your duties are. And the duties are to protect these life forms. When the peacemaker came to our territory about 1,000 years ago and brought this whole concept of peace as the original five nations, the Mohawks, the Oneidas, the Onondagas, the Cayugas, Senecas, were in a constant warfare. And we had really forgotten our instructions that we had prior to that, and we're not living by them. And peacemaker came among us and brought this whole idea, concept of peace and democracy. And he gave it to us whole. And it took him a long time to do that. There's a whole story about how he came and how he worked with Hayanwenta, whom you call Hiawatha, and how they worked and brought together this great confederacy called the Haudenosaunee, based on peace, based on equity, justice for people, and based on the power of the good minds, the power of unity, the issues of health, all given to us 1,000 years ago. And he laid out the process by which we do this. And one of the first things he said was he was going to give great responsibility to the women. Since the earth is female, then the women should be working with the earth. Men would be in charge of fire. Women would be in charge of water. And so we're the men work to see to the welfare. We do counseling, we do meetings, we do all of that, and if needs be, we fight. But basically, we're dedicated to peace. And that was what was so important about that time, 1,000 years ago. When if you looked in Europe at that time, there's great wars were going on, and the whole history of Europe, as I saw it, is one war after the other, century after century, how people lived in constant fear, and thousands of people died. Well, in this part of the universe, which was kind of just isolated, Western Hemisphere wasn't even known about, we were operating under a different system. And it was basically one of respect and counsels of leaders to try to keep the peace, because human nature is human nature, and you have to have a process by which to meet problems, and you have to have rules and so forth. So the rules was always based around respect. And fundamental to all of that was the understanding of how the earth itself was paramount to all of our life. And so in this idea of respect was also the understanding of what we should do and how we should conduct ourselves according to the elements of the earth and all of the natural worlds. So we always said that we have been told and understand that we're relatives. And where our white brother will talk about water and talk trees and animals and fish as resources, we talk about them as relatives. And that's a whole different perspective. If you think that they're relatives and you understand it and you understand that, then you're going to treat them differently. And the responsibility, the peacemaker said to us, was very clear. He planted a great tree of peace, a great white pine, a great symbol to our nations. He said, this is the great tree of peace. He said, its roots will be four white roots of truth that reach in the four directions of the earth. And those that have nowhere to go can follow the root back to its source and come under the protection of the great tree. And he says, on top of this tree, I place the eagle, and the eagle who will watch everything and watch and guard the security of this tree and will let us know when problems are coming. And he said that this tree of peace is a spiritual law. It represents a spiritual law. And the spiritual law is the law of nature. And he told us explicitly, never challenge this law, because you cannot prevail. You will not prevail. Wrap your laws, your rules, and your conduct. He said, you, the leaders, when you're weak as a human being, he said, this tree will give you your spine strength. Wrap yourself around this tree because it's powerful. Do not challenge the laws of nature, because you cannot, you will not prevail. Now that's great wisdom. That's 1,000 years ago. And it reminded us of our obligations. And so Indian nations in North America, South America, Central America, as far as I know, indigenous people around the world all have ceremonies. And these ceremonies are thanksgivings for what we have. We have just now initiated a great ceremony for the trees at Onondaga and longhouses of the Six Nations, still operational. And we hold these ceremonies for the leader of the trees, which is the maple. The maple is the leader. And so we have a ceremony of thanksgiving as soon as the sap starts running. And then when the sap stops, then we'll have a closure ceremony. But in between, we're thankful for all trees of this earth, wherever they are, whatever their names are, those that we know and those that we don't. We give thanks. And so if this kind of instruction were given and understood by other people, and you wouldn't be cutting trees all over the world and destroying the infrastructure of life and everything that's in the woods. We had a profound agreement when we first initiated the Five Nations, later become the Six Nations, with the Tuscarora Nation came in 1713, 1722, became the Six Nation. But we all agreed. We all agreed that we would work together and be together. And so we had a treaty amongst ourselves. And it was called simply One Dish, One Spoon. That's a concept of sharing. And this world has to understand the importance of sharing. I know that in the structure of the United States, it's very contrary to that. People are not instructed to share. They're instructed to gain. They're instructed to hold to themselves. They're instructed to gather unto themselves. And they're rewarded for that. And so you have an instruction that's contrary, very contrary to this whole concept, if indeed this is what you think is right. But this, I'm simply telling you what our instructions are. And so operating under this, you know, I've traveled to Indian nations across North America and Central America, and I always am invited to the ceremonies, and I know what's going on. I may not understand the language and the dances may be different, but I know what is being said. It's always the same. Thanksgiving to the creation. Thanksgiving to the life-giving forces of the earth. And you know, when the Christians came here, they made life hard for us. They brought a whole different thought and idea. And we're still suffering from that. But we can get into that on a later time. But in relation to all of this, and you're talking about conduct, a conduct is quite simple. Respect for life and understanding that life is our relatives and how goes it with them, goes it with us. And so we've taken this to a high degree. The chief, one of the chiefs in the Council of Chiefs at Onondaga. And I sit on behalf of the Turtle Clan, even though I myself am a wolf. And I've been there since 1967. I have a lot of experience with different administrations, with different events in this country. And I've watched a lot of changes. And I see that we're not doing very well. That we seem to be moving farther and farther away from what would be good for our grandchildren and their children. And so I think that the instructions for people is to be respectful for life, appreciate what you have, share what you have, and make up your own mind about things. It's very difficult to deal with a whole nation that's instructed to be greedy. You know, how do you deal with that? To be mindful of yourself and your own doings and to secure everything for yourself and to become, as they pointed out a few days ago, one of the billionaires of the world. They promote that and they say that's great and they say this is what you should be striving for. But we look at it differently. That amount of wealth in this time in life in Earth is a lot of influence. And a handful of people with that amount of influence and that kind of a direction in life are not going to take you in the right direction. I mean, they piecemeal stuff, and they can't say that they're bad people, but we don't say that at all. We just say that their instructions seem to be directed in the wrong way. And interesting, you know, to us being an American Indian and familiar with the processes of foundations and people trying to get money for this and that and poor Indians and so forth. First of all, today in all of the United States, we're less than 1% of the population of the country. And support for Indian causes from the foundation world is 0.06%, not even 1% going to Indians. Why is that? You know, it's an interesting question. Why is it that they don't want us to survive, that they don't see it's important, and that maybe we're more of a problem? I mean, the whole process of the United States history has been to assimilate us, and of course it's a question of land. So we've been fighting this whole issue of land claims. You know, in 1492, we owned all of North America and owned it in the broad sense in that it was in our caretaking, and no one owns the land. It always belongs to your children and your grandchildren. So we were protecting it in their interest. Well, a whole different thought came here. And when they first said they wanted to buy land, our leaders laughed and they said, how can you buy land? They said, that's like buying water or buying air. You can't buy land. Land belongs to everybody. But certainly not. And today we can see, yes, they do buy land. You can fly over America and you can see all the squares. But all this land is bought. But the land that you bought, you don't carry the responsibility that goes with the land. It's a personal gathering. And so the consequence of that is it's deteriorating. The present state of the world is very serious in terms of its health and how the health relates to us. I think we have to understand something here, and that is that the earth can deteriorate and ultimately lose its life-giving forces, and it can change and become barren, or it can change and become snow. It has its own direction. It has its own will and ability. And we're part of that. And so right now I see two big areas of concern. Some time back when Einstein was asked a question about what is the most powerful law of the universe, he said it was the law of compound. And I pondered that, you know, and I said, compound, what does that actually mean? And I really thought about it and have been thinking about it lately, and I come to the conclusion that it's kind of like an explosion in reverse. It starts slow and ends fast. Where an explosion starts fast and slow. So compound, we're in two that I see. And one is a compound of the ice melting, and the other is a compound of human population. Both are moving and accelerating. Both are under their own direction. It doesn't seem like there's a control factor here for either one. Certainly the ice melt is something beyond our control at the moment, because what it takes the instruction of the peacemaker to be of one mind. He said, when you're of one mind, the power of the good mind can change anything. And so we have to somehow get to that point of unity of thought and direction and effort. And if we can do that, we certainly can mitigate what's going on now. You know, when we're concerned is for the children and their grandchildren and their children. Peacemaker said, you know, that we're responsible and that we should be always watching. And so I think what he's saying and the instruction is correct and could happen. America is isolated from the world, both in thought and conduct, size, oceans. And in that isolation, you know, it's heavily involved in what's going on inside America. Like, for instance, you know, and I'm part of that, too, because the other, this weekend, Syracuse University just won the, you know, the Big East title. Well, I'm an alumni of Syracuse, and so I enjoyed that. But this whole country is fixed on the idea of sports. It's fixed on the idea of distractions and human titillation, if you will, or whatever it may be. And they're not looking at the large pictures. And they've become insulated against the realities of the world. Even our poor people in the U.S. would be wealthy in any other part of the world. I mean, poor people in America have television sets. That's not the way it is in the rest of the world. And we're just maybe one-fifth of the population of the whole world, and yet we're using one-quarter of all the resources. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, that Indian nations have what they call prophecies. But also the Bible has prophecies. And people have had prophecies all the time. It seems to be part of human nature. And these prophecies, currently we're working on organizing them. And as I studied them, I come to the conclusion they're not so much prophecies as they are instructions of conduct. And the prophecies being that this will happen if you don't do this, or this will happen if you drop this. So it always leaves the option to the present. It always leaves the option to the current generation. And I think that that's the importance of these prophecies. Now, we've had three major events for the Haudenosaunee. One was the first time when we were given the instructions of how to live, which some people would call religion or ceremonies. And that was long ago. We're not sure exactly when, but we do know the process, and we knew what happened, how it happened, very, very, very long ago. And then somehow we got lost, personally, I mean, the six, five nations, and began this fighting. And then we had the second instruction or support, and that was the coming of the peacemaker, spiritual being, who gave us this great idea of democracy and organized our thoughts in that direction. And I mentioned earlier that he gave this responsibility of raising the leaders to the women. He also instructed us on the importance of clans. So I think this relationship is important. People should understand the relationship between us and the natural world. And we love that so much that we have taken on the symbol of our relatives. And so, as you see, I'm wearing the symbol of the turtle. Well, the turtle also represents North America, the Great Turtle Island. And it's a symbol of longevity and of strength. And so we have a turtle clan. And yet I told you I'm a wolf. So we have a relative of a wolf. And the deer, and the bear, and the eel, and the hawk, and the beaver, snipe, all of these. And so that's how we see ourselves. And a wolf is a wolf is a wolf. And so I'm always mindful of what's happening to my four-footed brother. And we were instructed to watch that and to see, because they said, whatever happens to him is going to happen to you. And so how we treat these animals who are doing what they do they live in a state of grace. They don't do anything wrong. They just do what they do. And they do their best to do it in spite of everything, and everything they continue. So you know, in New York City as we sit here, pretty quick now, there's going to be hawks flying through here. And certainly the geese are flying. And this is an old flyway right here. They used to stop here all the time. They still fly. They still go by here because it's an old rule, an old law. It goes on. It's just that you don't see them. But they are doing their best to continue. And so it's like that around everywhere. And we have to understand this relationship. And so we have that. And it brings us closer. And it helps us to respect better how they serve with us and how life works. Quite a while back, maybe 150 years ago, Chief Seattle said something that was very profound. Said a lot that was very profound. But one thing he said was, we are part of a web of life, and every strand is important, and that what befalls one part will befall the other. And so this is what we don't seem to understand or comprehend, is this web of life that we live in and how interdependent we are. So there's a great imbalance. There's a great imbalance of humanity on this earth, and the natural laws don't abide that. They don't abide. And there's law, and the best thing you can do is keep the balance. So we should be paying real attention to that. And just the quality of life that comes from all the beings that are here. They'll be denied our grandchildren. And then when they lose that, then they lose even better perspective of how to survive. So we're destroying their well-being. We're really destroying the efforts that they can put forward if they have the respect and knowledge. I don't know. This style of talking and observation, they tell me, is not realistic in today's times. And I suppose not if you're thinking in terms of Wall Street and you're thinking in terms of power and authority. But in the long run, it is absolutely the law. And as the peacemaker told us a long time ago, it will prevail. And so the earth itself, well, it'll change. It'll cool down. We'll have another ice age. And we're in that process right now. The trigger has been pulled, the action is taken, and it's going on right now. And I've had long discussions with scientists in different parts of the world, and they tell us that's exactly what's going on. The amazing thing is that this country, the United States, refuses to acknowledge that. Just astonishing. The democratic process in America has been co-opted now by corporations and big money. And it's hard to even reach the ear of your representative for the common person. So the common person feels helpless. But they aren't, if they understand. And in this idea of democracy, which I must say, the Iroquois had a lot to do with, you know. If you read the discussion by Ben Franklin, he'll tell you that he was very, very impressed with this idea of democracy and leadership by agreement and consent, and the ability to set up leaders and remove them. He was very, very impressed. And so, you know, from 1754, when they had the discussion in Albany, Plan of Union, came directly from Six Nations. He asked our leaders to preside, and a chief by the name of Hendrick, Mohawk chief, presided at that time, explained, talk about democracy. So we've had a lot to do, and we have, you know, in 1987, the Senate passed S-76, recognizing the contribution of the Iroquois to the Constitution of the United States. So it's there. That was 100% passed, if you can think of that, and that was hopeful. So I think that the earmarks are here of what's happening. You can look about and see the change in temperatures. everybody's kind of basking in the warm winters, and kind of they don't say so, but they like it. But the lack of snow on the ground, is bad for the earth. That's water. Earth is water. So when the earth doesn't have a blanket of snow, that it can melt slowly into the earth and rejuvenate the water, then you're going to have a dry season. And then the influx of winds, high winds, we see that. That was told to us. We were told two things, they said, that will tell you what the condition of the earth will be when the earth is deteriorating. One will be the acceleration of the winds, and the other will be how people treat their children. And we see, you know, it's a comment on both the natural world and a comment on human population. So how people are treating the children today are very bad. At the time when people mentioned that, our people, well, that can't be. Who would mistreat children? Well, of course, we know better. We know better today. And the winds we've seen, and they're coming stronger. We were told long ago that the winds are so strong that if they ever do come down to the earth itself, they can blow the very dirt off the face of the earth. And we don't want to see that. And we're told that the only way to do that is to be respectful and in your conduct. And so there's a lot of indicators of what's going on today. Population beyond control. Mother Earth has laws and rules, and one of them is balance. She will keep the balance, regardless. And if an element is out of balance, like the population of human beings on this earth, she'll balance it. How she does that, we may not like. Most likely it'll come with disease. And this will be very democratic. It will go across people's lives. It'll go across leaders. It'll go across everything, because really there's no mercy in nature. There's only the law and the rule. And I think that's where we fail. And we're way, way away from that. And people have taken religion and confused it with their own ideas of power and authority. From what I know, and I don't know a lot, I think old age gives you one perspective, and that's the older you get, the more you realize how little you know and how much more there is to know. So at my age, I have a perspective about that, and I see that human nature and human beings have a very consistent way of doing things, and that's learning the hard way. They just love to learn the hard way. And it seems like every generation has that, even though the instructions are clear. So I remember, even with my own son, Rex, a lot of trouble with Rex from the beginning. My daughter was fine. Rex, he had a hard time. And I used to call him Rex the hard way. It took him a long time, but he's doing well. And he had to learn the hard way. And I tell you, it was hard. Hard on everybody. But I think in these times, we don't have a lot of time. The peacemaker said to the assembled chiefs that he had taken all this time to raise and instruct and give, you know, the clans and the nations and the responsibilities of the women, responsibilities of the men, responsibilities of the people, which is by far the largest responsibility. And he said that when you sit and you counsel for the welfare of the people, think not of yourself, nor of your family, or even your generation. He said, but make your decisions on behalf of the seventh generation coming, so they may enjoy what you have today. So it's an instruction of responsibility. It was a very visionary instruction. It was a long-term instruction. It was one that looked seven generations, and I'm talking the full life of a person, not the generations they have today, 20 years or so. To us, that's not a generation. So he was saying, if you take care of the future, You'll be taking care of yourself. You yourself will have peace. So peace is what we want. Peace is what we're after. And the wars that are raging about now are violent, violent. I would say examples of what happens when you refuse to acknowledge a better way of life. And we have to do better if we're going to survive. And I'll tell you this, that the earth is not going to disappear. They have a great regenerative power, this earth. And one of my good friends, John Mohawk, young man, what I call resident intellect of Iroquois, great, brilliant mind. He said, I always thought that human beings are still a biological experiment. We're here a short time. We haven't been here long. In the time of the earth, not very long at all. And the earth is not dependent on us. We're dependent on it. So that if we choose to eradicate ourselves from this earth, by whatever means, the earth goes nowhere. And in time, it will regenerate. And all the lakes will be pristine. The rivers, the waters, the mountains, everything will be green again. It'll be peaceful. There may not be people, but the earth will regenerate. And you know why? Because the earth has all the time in the world, and we don't. So I think that's where we're at right now. Sometime long ago, I think it was when Europe began to domesticate animals, I took a different course and direction in life from what things used to be. Not to say it was wrong, just simply what happened. And that developed into a whole idea of Europe, and it developed into nations, the idea of nations. They're relatively new, this idea of nations. Nation states is certainly new. And states, that's almost within our lifetime, but not quite. This whole idea of consolidation of power in entities has been a development of humanity to a great degree. Unless, of course, you were indigenous and you were living in the North Country, where you really had to depend on your knowledge of the environment to survive. The best teachers that we had, and we learned from all the time, was nature and the animals. They taught us a lot. And any indigenous person will tell you that. I know one of the leaders from Greenland, Inuit man, said, if it wasn't for the bear, we wouldn't know how to survive. And so it is that's important, and what the teachers are, and how they do things, and how you observe that. Indigenous people have great observation. We've learned that over a period of time. I myself am not a spiritual leader. I happen to agree to work for the Confederation and work for the Onondaga Nation, but I'm just simply a runner for elders and for people who knew a lot. And I'm not the best person, I don't think, in terms of representation of indigenous people. However, as it turned out, in this idea of running, and I do that a lot, I go everywhere and I speak, and they said, well, you've learned how to speak the English language very well, so you'll go and do it. And they instruct me what to say, and then I go and do it. But also in that process, you have to think on your feet and make some decisions and so forth. So anyway, over the period of time, I've, and I'm what you call an acclimated man. And I think the Iroquois have been in contact with Western European society for a long time. The first treaty we had was 1613. It was called the Two-Row Wampum. And we laid down some discussion points at that time. We said that, well, you know, you want to trade in our territory, talking to the Dutch, 1613. But we see that you're not seeming to go away here. So we think that maybe we better talk about relationship, how are we going to deal with one another. And so we set up the two-row belt, which essentially says that it's your ship, your people, your ways of life, your governments, our canoe, our people, our way of life. We go down through the river of life, the Gaswenta, side by side, and we'll be hooked together with a chain, three links, peace, friendship, for as long as the sun rises in the east, as long as the rivers run downhill, and as long as the grass grows green. That's where those words are. There, it's the grandfather of all treaties between us and our white brother. And so you'll hear that. You'll hear those words again and again, whether you hear it from Oklahoma or whether you hear it. It's a standard. And so we talked about respect there, and we respected them, and we established process. So I think at the time there was a real option on the part of Europeans to change when they came here. But I I think that two-row belt was a great observation and a great comment on how we saw life. If you saw the belt, and we have it, it's a white belt that's about 3 feet long and has two rows of purple beads from the quahog shell. And the two rows are equal, side by side, going down the white representing peace in the river of life. And one row representing the boat and the other the canoe, held together by this three links we call the covenant chain of friendship. Now that was, you know, a time, the 1613, you know, when Europe was in flames, so to speak, when there was huge ravages of typhoid and great plagues going on, and a lot of starving, and wars. And I think it's what they brought over here. And I think at that time, if they listened more to our direction and took it a little bit more realistically, it might have been a great opportunity to change direction. But if you remember, in the northeast was the Pilgrims that landed. And they were coming with a mindset about religion and God and law, which we thought was very curious, because they did a lot of things we thought was just really dumb, really stupid. And they didn't laugh or they didn't smile. They all wore black. Really, it was just we were just kind of fascinated by this group of people, but and underestimated them, I'm sure. And that idea, that mindset, and that Christian doctrine, that Christian idea has really dominated this land. And they said, after a while, they said, if the blood runs to our ankles, we'll take our land. And they called our land their land. If the blood runs to our ankles. So it showed that they were bringing this idea. And the whole history of what occurred with the Spanish, the conquistadores, the Inquisition, all going on, 1492, the Pope's declaration that we're flora and fauna, that we have no right of title to this land, established into U.S. federal law. Obviously, they had a chance. Second big chance was when they formed the United States, and we were working with them in that direction. Continental Congress came to us and said, will you fight with us against the King of England? And our chief said to him, that's your father. We know your father. We've worked with your father. We love your father. We know you. We've worked with you, and we love you as well. So we see this as a fight between father and son. So we think it wouldn't be proper to join in this family fight. The Continental Congress representatives, and they were meeting upstate New York then, and they said, well, good. They said, because that was our second request. If you were not going to fight with us, you wouldn't fight against us. And we said, that's what we think. And Six Nations at that time was merely trying to survive these huge elements of power from France and from England and from Spain, and these, you know, whipsawing right across what is now New York. We were right in the middle of this thing and using the best of our ability to survive. And so we took that position. And George Morgan, who was the one speaking, said, that's good. We agree with that. And so he went back to the Continental Congress, and John Hancock, first president of the Continental Congress, commissioned a wampum belt to be made and to verify this, sanction this, and sanctify it. And this belt was made. He commissioned it, and they made it. They were dealing in our style of government, wampum. And the meeting was held at Fort Pitt, 1776, and there was the first peace meeting between the new United States and the Six Nations. And even at that time, Six Nations asked them, where's your flag? And they realized they really didn't have a flag. And the first flags that they flew, if you remember, was a pine tree. It was a pine tree with an eagle on top. And so they took a lot from us. They took a whole lot. Government by consent, bicameral, two houses, elder brothers, younger brothers, council fires, the great fires, they called themselves the 13 fires, as we called ourselves the 6 fires. Oh, we were really, really involved. Our chiefs were up and down the whole East Coast in almost every event, died on the road, trying hard to survive and keep the peace. And I think at that time, the opportunity was there. And then when they made the Constitution, another great opportunity. But they wouldn't give up slavery. They would not give up slavery. And the women were nowhere to be seen. And we said, well, you know, how can you ignore 50% of the population, you know, not only that, but with so much, you know, dependent upon them. Well, that wasn't their style. And there was a kind of a reverting back to European thinking. And I think that was a failed point there in history. And then they began to consolidate, and it worked up to the point when they called the Manifest Destiny about 1843, I think, first time that was mentioned. Manifest Destiny. We are, God has destined us to be the leaders. And I think it's that kind of thinking that has been driving this country. And I think that these wars that we're engrossed in right now are nothing but an extension of that kind of thinking. And very, very ill-timed and ill-conceived and you know, has created such turmoil across the world. We have to have peace. We have to have a better understanding of who we are. And there has to be a great sharing. So how can you expect a country, you know, who would elect President Bush, although people will say that he didn't get elected, but, you know, you're talking about a the highest court in the world challenged for their integrity. And now Indian nations, you know, trying to maintain themselves. Study made some time ago that found out that the Lakotas in Pine Ridge were the poorest people in the United States. And yet, they should have one half of all home state coal mining. That should go to them, according to the Treaty of 1868, Fort Laramie. That was the agreement. And these treaties that we have today, that we still have, we try to activate them. It's impossible. It's ignored, but it's real. So I think America has to change course and quickly. They have to instruct the children in a better way. They have to be aware that there are forces larger than human forces. These forces are absolute, with no mercy. And if you don't learn, you're just going to suffer the consequence. And so that's the instruction has to come from the leadership and from the people. There are so many good people in this world, and that gives me hope all the time. Now, you know, as I said before, I represent a council, I represent a nation, I represent a confederation, and I represent often Indian thinking across America. And we have a traditional circle of Indian elders and youth. We meet annually, and we have this discussion. And we talk about the condition of the earth and how it is and what's in store. And there is hope, always hope. And the hope is in the conduct of the people. Peacemaker said to us in the instructions, he said, "Now I place in your hands the welfare of all life." He didn't say the welfare of the people. He said the welfare of all life. And we take that literally. So when I travel and when I speak, I'm just doing my instructions that was given so long ago. Because our mandate is to look out for everybody. And I can tell you that when we have our ceremonies, and we're going to have a planting ceremony pretty soon, and we're going to have a ceremony for the strawberries, the leader of the fruit, and we'll have a ceremony for the beans, and we'll have a corn ceremony. When we have these ceremonies, you're all included. We don't say this is a ceremony for the underdogs. We say this is a ceremony for the people. And we were told that as long as we hold these ceremonies, we're going to survive. As long as there's one to listen, one to speak, one to sing, one to dance, we'll fight on. And so it's up to us. It comes down to us at the last minute. And we have to use our common sense, which is not so common anymore. And I think we have to rely on our own observations and challenge poor leadership, change leadership, and act quickly and strongly and be convinced of our direction.
And that was Orrin Lyons, who is a faith keeper of the Turtle Clan, Onondaga Council of Chiefs of the Haudenosaunee Six Nations Confederacy. Orrin Lyons, very well-known spiritual leader who has been part of many different environmental groups, many different indigenous rights groups. And there he was speaking back in 2006 to Tree TV as part of an interview that I think was being conducted for the film by Leonardo DiCaprio, or co-produced, co-written by Leonardo DiCaprio, which is a film that came out in 2007. So I believe this was recorded in 2006. And a small clip of it was featured in the 11th hour. But there you had almost the entire thing. Thanks for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Ryan Young. If you are ever interested in emailing us, you can email us at equilibrium@ckut.ca. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/equilibriumckutmontreal. So thanks for listening. This is Ryan Young. Have a great rest of your day.
Now Cara Patties is on a fast break with Veggie Patty leading the charge. The pass is down deep to Goat Patty. Goat Patty passes baseline to Beef Patty. Beef Patty shoots from downtown at the buzzer. And bingo! It's in! It's in! Cara Patties wins the game and is now the world champions! The number one in Montreal. Come on down to 9550 Jean Milot in LaSalle for the best patties, roadies, jerk chicken, and more. Or call us at 438-387-4004. Carib Patties, the champions of Montreal.
Them fi know you in a man puppy insane a play for the girl in your seat. Downtown sound represent for me ladies.
If you wanna run away with me, I know a galaxy and I can take you for a ride. I had a premonition that we fell into a rhythm where the music don't stop for life. Glitter in the sky, glitter in my eyes, shining just the way I like. If you're feeling like you need a little bit of company, you met me at the perfect time.
One of the greatest, ain't no debating on it. I'm still levitated, I'm heavily medicated. Ironic, I gave him love and they end up hating on me. She told me she loved me and she been waiting. Been fighting hard for your love and I'm running thin on my patience. Needing someone to hug, even took it back to the basics. You see what you got me out here doing? Might have threw me off, but can't nobody stop the movement. Let's go. Left foot, right foot, levitating. Pop stars, do a leap with the baby. I had to lace my shoes for all the blessings I was chasing. If I ever slip, I fall into a better situation. So catch up, go put some cheese on it. Get out and get your bread up. They always leave when you fall, but you run together.
Feel the beat.
Wait a minute, that's too fast.
Now what?
Kick it over here, baby pop!
CKUT, yo, this is...